And good morning, and welcome to Coffee with Radio Ranch Wranglers here on the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network. We're coming to you live this January 10th, 2026, and we welcome you folks out there. We'll be right back right after this song. Stay tuned.
Gordon Call was right when he made his famous stand. Heaven knows there was a man who fought the righteous fight till the wrong arm of the law gunned him down in Arkansas. He would not pay one dime of tribute to the IRS. And for his disobedience, they planned his fiery death. And now all is fair in love and war. Christian blood has been shed before. And though these tents of flesh may fail, the gates of hell shall never prevail. Because he gave his life for me, I shall not fear adversity, and we shall all meet at heaven's door. 'Cause all is fair in love and war. Five forty-five p.m. on a North Dakota road, February 83, that's when the war began, where two federal marshals died for the sake of tyranny. They both would underestimate the courage of one man, who only shot in self-defense to save his promised land. Fair in love and war, Christian blood has been shed before. And though these tents of flesh may fail, the gates of hell shall never prevail. Because he gave his life for me, I shall not fear adversity, and we shall all meet at heaven's door. 'Cause all is fair in love and war. When all was said and done, and the verdicts handed down, someone had to take the fall, and it was Gordon's son, who was wounded in the fray. Please won't you pray for your recall, who now must waste his life away inside some stinking jail. Please pray the Lord might set him free. Through faith we shall prevail. They say all is fair in love and war, Christian blood has been shed. And though these tents of flesh may fail, the gates of hell shall never prevail. Because he gave his life for me, I shall not fear adversity, and we shall all meet at heaven's door. 'Cause all is fair in love, in love and war.
And good morning once again, and I'll bring the men on the line. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
And good morning, Will.
Good morning, guys.
And Will, would you start us off with a word of prayer this morning, please, sir?
You bet. Father God in heaven, thank you, Lord, for the opportunity to be here this morning with Jason, Tim, and all of our friends listening. God, I just pray that the conversations that we have this morning will be pleasing to you, Lord, and uplifting to the remnant, and Lord, that we can do the work of you in building the kingdom and just praising your name. And Lord, I pray in this conversation we'll make some sense of what's going on in the world, and we just ask for your intercession in that process, Lord, of trying to make sense of it. And in your name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, sir. Well, I wanted to start off with, you know, I started off with that song, Carl Kling's song, fantastic song, All Is Fair in Love and War, the song about Gordon Call. And just recently put up on the Newswire, wanted to tell people about it. There's a lot of people that don't know who Gordon Call is or the Gordon Call story. And I was able to put together a couple of the – they were rough documentaries that were done years ago. And one of them was from the memorial of – I believe it was from 1989 – that Pastor Peters attended down in Arkansas, and one was from a from one recording was from the church, LaPorte Church of Christ, in the late 80s, and I put together those, and I posted them on the website. They're posted two different places. I posted them on SFAWBN as a story, and also under the resources tab on sfaw.org. Really good information, valuable information, story that, you know, is worth repeating just so people don't forget. And the reason I did that this week was woke up one morning, Gordon Call was on my mind, and went and pulled out some of the stuff out of the archives. And it's one of those things is I got these different folders there, and it's sometimes I just pull them out and I start working on stuff for down the road. And pulled it out, was thinking about it, pulled it out, started working on it, and went and it had to have been the Holy Spirit inspired, but went and looked up what Gordon Call's birthday was. And it was on January 8th, 1920. And it was January 8th when I had just decided to pull this project out and start working on it a little bit. And so I went ahead and got that posted up there, and got that done, and went and sat down and wrote Yori Call a letter, and sent it to him off with some of the information that I was putting together. And do ask that people pray for him. He's in pretty bad shape. I haven't got an update in a while. Last I heard that last letter that I got from him, he was in a walker and had several surgeries and wasn't getting around very good. And then I got some updates that he was full of cancer. And that's the last that I've heard. So do ask that people keep Yori in your prayers as well. You guys got anything that you want to add to that?
I think back in the 80s, like that was pretty much several news cycles as far as what went on there. And I think that it's strange how we, like you said, we remember some of those people, because it's funny how they wring out the rag and throw it off the side, and you know, it's like it's left on the refuse heap of memory. These people, they're pivotal in our nation's history in ways that are hard to even flesh out completely, but it still happened and they still need to be remembered, and they're important. So I agree with. Yeah.
One of the things that came to mind, just as both of you gentlemen were speaking, I was just thinking about Gordon Call and, you know, what makes that whole incident unique. And really, even before what happened in Medina and then in Arkansas down in Smithville and all that, but what led up to it, and truly, if you go back to that time frame with everything that's going on in the country, in my mind, just now, I thought Gordon Call was a man that just wanted to be left alone. He wasn't on a campaign to bring down the government, or, you know, he's not, you know, the narrative they like to build a lot of times. You know, he wasn't sitting on a cache of illegal weapons or anything like that. He was just a farmer, and he just wanted to be left alone. And they were hell bent not to leave him alone. And one of the things that was, I'm sure lots of people have lots of opinions about Gordon Call. I think he's a hero. I think he's an American patriot and a hero
And one of the things that I would say about him this morning was Gordon Call was good to his word. He said, "You leave me alone and things will be fine." And, you know, I don't want to go off on too much about that, but for anyone who doesn't know the Gordon Call story, really listen to these programs that Jason has put together, and you'll see the government overreach and this nonsense that the federal government participates in is nothing new. It's been going on for, gosh, almost 50 years now, getting close to it. And Gordon Call was, in my opinion, a martyr for the Patriot movement. And I think Gordon Call is an American hero, and I hope that's how he's remembered.
Exactly. I think that's really well put. I think that, and the thing that, you know, people need to realize and need to remember is he was murdered. And there's a lot of, you know, the final accounts was, as you know, they shot each other, and it's just, it's simply not possible. And that's, man, that's the
it's
thing.
It's far from that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the reviews that were done at the time left a lot of they didn't just cast shadow on that whole, you know, scenario. It was basically debunked to the hilt when they did that and went down there and looked it all over. And there was a great deal of weight given to the fact that Matthews was, I think it was Matthews, was killed. The sheriff there, he was probably murdered as well, you know, just because.
No, most definitely.
Yeah.
Well, he was shot in the back with a shotgun, and Gordon didn't have a shotgun.
Shotgun, exactly, yes. And the other thing is about the programs that Jason's got laid out here is they were made at very close to the time when all
yes.
this was going on. So accuracy is a big deal. And when you look, I did a little bit of searching, just not because I was there. I mean, I understood. I watched and we had communication with people, but I wanted to see what was online. And it's amazing how distorted the information is on, say, for example, just a Google search or a, you know, something like that. It's like, wow, talk about steering the narrative. So, So firsthand or near-hand accounts are important because they're made through the lens of reality. And at the time, the way things were at that time as far as sentiments and what was going on. And these, what do you want to call it, aftermarket idealisms that are put out now today, why they're made through the lens of control and continued, you know, power and victors, at least short term ones, you know, they write history the way they see it. But that's not necessarily the way it happened. It usually isn't the way it happened. So.
Yeah. Very interesting. Well, we got off on that, and let's go and back to world news. I know that's where we need to start off with, but I just wanted to start. Well, I wanted to start off with that and just put it out there. Check the videos out. Go to the website sfawbn.com or sfaw under resources. There's a new just Gordon Call link there, and you can click that. You can watch the videos there online, and I also put a link up there to that song that Carl Kling did about Gordon Call. And, we'll go back to, man, everything over in Iran and stormtroopers and stuff, people bouncing around crossing the border. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world today.
Yeah. Boy, howdy.
Yeah.
The, one of the things that's interesting, and it's kind of a, man, it seems like we talk about the same thing every Saturday. We just add additional countries and names. Yeah, I don't know if you guys have thought about that. It's like it's the same
playbook. It's just happening in different places in the world. And one of the things that's happening over there in Iran now that's interesting, kind of what you were alluding to, Jason, with the stormtroopers, is you have other nations moving soldiers into Iran. I know it's Iraq and Hezbollah and other organizations and groups and people. It seems like they're moving troops in to bolster up the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. And if people don't know, I don't watch any mainstream news, so I really don't know what's being reported or not, like on your CBSs and things like that. But there's an awful lot of rioting going on in Iran. Streets are burning. I mean, it's very reminiscent of what you see in other places. And what I'm about to say is not to compliment Iran or anything like that, but this is just not something you see in Iran. They keep a pretty tight lid on their people there. And of course there's the usual suspects, you know, lots of people in different places are pointing their fingers saying, well, this is the American CIA. This is the Israeli Mossad that's kind of perpetrating all of this and getting the people to riot. But as of this morning, I did catch this, that once again, Trump reiterated that if the Iranian government starts killing these people that are rioting, that the United States will move into Iran and intercede on behalf of these people. And so you stop and kind of put that in perspective. So if you're the government, and I'm not taking up for the government of Iran or anything like that, but if you're the government of Iran, so you have this big superpower that's giving you the choice. You can either let your people riot and overthrow the government, or if you try to stop them, we're going to come in and overthrow your government. Pick your poison. Which one do you want? So I don't know. It's very interesting to see that being so unstable over there.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Go ahead, Tim.
Well, the whole thing is, it's like I think Will said it really well. You know, the places and the names have changed, but the actions are the same. You know, I mean, it's just like, yeah. And it's almost like I feel when I look at this, like we're knee-jerk reactive as a nation over there, although it sounds to me, you know, when someone's reactive, all you have to do to activate them is give them the right input. And I feel sometimes like we're being used like a puppet as far as the nation goes. You know, it's just like, well, if we do this, they'll do that, because that's, you know. So it's funny that I was reading through the one article, and, you know, Iran was over there offering $7 a month. They could barely scrape that up to their citizens, $7 a month to stop the protests and everything else. But, you know, they didn't have any trouble dropping billions to send it as Hezbollah. So I think when we look at a lot of those kind of things, people aren't the priority there. I had a buddy years ago who ended up in, I think he was in Saudi working on a construction project over there. And he was talking about how wealthy those citizens were, because they get oil payments from the, you know, government, a share of percentage of that, and how that worked. But obviously, that doesn't work that way in the green. And I'm not saying it's a good thing or not in Saudi, but I'm just saying there's a lot of mechanics there to give me pause and to ask questions. And you can see, I think we've alluded to the fact that a lot of the Islamic, you know, background noise is created and aided and abetted by Israeli powers and forces and leadership, either covertly or overtly. And I think that this is just some more of the same, don't you?
I do. Jason, if you don't mind, I'm just going to ask you guys, excuse me, you know, Tim was just talking about the state of Israel, and you know, it's sure they, in my opinion, they are probably pushing this more than the United States. The United States is just being the blind ally, you know, supporting anything that the state of Israel does or wants. Why does Israel want Iran so badly? And I was thinking about this. I believe it goes back thousands of years. I mean, to the beginnings of time. I don't know if you guys have thought about this. And Tim, you and I have had some kind of conversations like this, but maybe not necessarily about this particular region. But if, you know, I go back to the biblical archaeology and I think about E. Raymond Capp, and, you know, I think one of the best programs I've seen, it's an older program now, but the special that Pastor Pete did with E. Raymond Capp on roots, that's an evergreen message that anyone that's interested in our people, that's one that should be seen. But, Mr. Capp goes into great detail there talking about, the origins of our people, the true Israelites, and, you know, the Scythian people coming out of Persia. Well, Persia's Iran. And my question is do you think there is any correlation to that? Because I know that the Israelites do everything they can to cover up the actual truth of who the Israelites are. That is the deception. Just like in John 8, where, you know, their father is the father of lies, and he's been a liar and a murderer since the beginning. They want to do everything they can to obfuscate and cover up the truth. Is there some reason they want that country for that reason? Or, I mean, I'm just curious to know what y'all's opinions are. That may be too deep this early in the program on Saturday morning, but I just, what do y'all think about that?
Well, I think that, you know, God said he hated Esau, and I think that the modern Israelis are Esau Edom. And, I think that when you get into, you know, Malachi 1:3 said, he said, I hated Esau and laid his mountains and his heritage waste for the dragons of the wilderness. And, you know, it basically is going to go on forever. God said he's not going to get over that. And I think they hate him right back. And I think that in order for him, there's a real headbutt there, you know. And again, we're told, you know, that it's a terrible thing to fall into that means to anger God. Hate and anger kind of go together. So I think it goes back into time way back there. And it hasn't changed any yet. They think they're gonna run all that stuff. They think they're gonna, you know, take it all the way in front of their nose at God. And everything else is just cannon fodder. So I mean, that's kind of the Reader's Digest. My point, I guess.
Just the same old battle, huh?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to change until the end. What do you think, Jason?
Yeah, I think I would agree with you. I don't know. I mean, just I think that they want everything from Israel, Jordan, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan. I think that they've got their hands in basically all these countries. I think they'd like to take control of all of it over there. I mean, but...
Well, yeah, and if you don't start with the people around you, how are you going to run the whole world? And I think that's kind of their ultimate...
That's their MO. That's what they're... Well, they've done a good job at it, too.
How much of it do you want? All of it. You know, that's...
All of it. A little more. Yeah.
Just one more. That's the MO. And, you know, they're not, when is enough enough? Never.
You know, you're dealing with the creature of an instinct too. So you got to think about that. Is, you know, we probably don't understand why they do a lot of these things. They just they just do.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of the part where the Bible talks about what is it they're not asleep to their destruction. You know, I mean, whatever. We don't understand destroyers. We're builders. We fix things. We make things better. That's what God put in our heart. And they're the opposite of all that. So why would you understand? As a matter of fact, the general God's people heart situation is I wonder if I can fix that. You can't fix that. I mean, there's no fixing it. I mean, it's back to that a frog and the scorpion story. That's what I do, you know. And So they don't.
Or all combined, or they could be using it just as a training ground to raise up groups of terrorists to go terrorize other countries too.
Sure.
I mean,
going back to taking over the whole world.
With what Will said though, I think that there's got to be a lot to that. I think that there's some kind of history that, you know, that they try to cover up so much of that stuff, and they want to destroy. It's different when we go into countries and stuff. We, you know, historically speaking, you know, we try to make things better. They go into countries and they try to make things worse.
Yeah.
And they do.
Yeah.
And they do, for sure. Yeah. No, I don't know. I think, you know, I don't want to put too much effort into this, but I've tried to figure out, you know, this whole greater Israel thing of, like, what you were just saying, Jason, you know, of, you named off that litany of country, basically from Egypt to Afghanistan, right? And everything in the middle is what they want. And I just look at that and think, why do they want it, other than what Tim said of they're just hell-bent on conquering the world, because that's, I don't know, this is their dominion, I guess. And at least that's what they think. And I don't know. It's just, I know that the whole, if you go back and think about Esau living by the sword, and I'm not saying there's not other war-like countries, because certainly there are. There's large militaries and that sort of thing. But if you want to stop and think about a group of people that are perpetually at war, that little bastard nation over there, from its inception, has been at war. I'm not sure there's 6 weeks in a row where they have not gone through some kind of skirmish or battle since their supposed existence over there. And I just they are people of the sword, and just like Jesus told Peter, they'll die by the sword too.
It's basically the same group that wanted to make war on heaven, you know, rise up and make war on heaven.
That's right.
An area, even, you know, historically, and if they can't get into heaven to make war with God, they'll make all the hell on earth they possibly can. Maybe they can. You know, and eventually it sounds to me like, when I read my Bible, like, yeah, he's going to come down and fight you. You're not going to like that either. So, it's one of those things.
It's funny you say that, Tim, because I've thought about that, of why do they want these lands, what you were just referring to as far as, historically, geographically, kind of the same areas, Tower of Babel and, you know, all of that sort of stuff. And these Talmudists, these people who follow the Talmud and the Zohar and, you know, all of this esoteric Luciferian teaching, I've wondered that too. Is it their belief that this
geographic land has some, you know, demonic meaning to them, that they need to retake those lands to wage another war against heaven. I don't know. I think there's more that goes on there. We look at the modern geographic borders and the modern people that inhabit those lands and think, you know, the Israelis are wanting to fight the Iranians. And it's probably a lot deeper than that, going back thousands of years.
Yeah. Well, I heard something the other day that left me kind of thinking a little bit. And it was one of the guys who was talking about Zionism and the Zionists. And he said, well, that's not Zionism and Judaism aren't the same thing. You know, Zionism is the political concept. And it's like that kind of, I was like, yeah, it is. But the problem is it's driven by Judaism. I mean, they are, you know, they're still interconnected and interlinked. And you've got the Kabbalah and the Talmud, the Judaism and Zionism, but it's still all in the same, you know, pot of lentils that, you know, was there. And that's gone, you know. Yeah.
It's interesting, Tim, because I don't know if we heard the same thing, but I heard the same argument this week from, I don't know, I read it in an article or heard a talking head talk about it or something, of trying to separate the idea of modern Zionism and Judaism. And it's one of those things of, well, you can't have one without the other.
No.
You know, these are not separate. They're one and the same. They just have different names. And that is interesting. I wonder, with both of us hearing that, I wonder if that's going to be a new talking point, huh? That, you know, these militant Zionists, those aren't really Jews. You know, there are good Jews out there that don't really believe that. And that may be the next thing that we start hearing.
It may very well be. And I think it's the other thought that occurred to me as I listened to that was the fact that it's interesting that they're trying to bring up a disconnect between those two things. It's like, I call it an escape hatch, you know. It's like, oh, no, we're not. But Judaism spawns Zionism, or vice versa. Anyway, they're you know, they're mutually sympathetic creations or ideals that they feed off each other. You can't have one without the other. So, yeah. And it may be that there's enough pressure being brought on the world stage that they're looking for some kind of escape hatch there, just in case they need to duck their head down. You know, so makes you wonder.
You know, it would be interesting. You were just talking about Judaism spawning Zionism. It would be interesting to sit down with a pencil and a paper and a cup of coffee and think about all the things Judaism has spawned. And I bet that would be a real rogues gallery of not so nice things. I can't really think of anything that Judaism has spawned that was virtuous and positive for society.
No, it pretty much foments rebellion and upheaval everywhere it goes. I mean,
Yep. I mean, you stop and think about, you know, all the things, right? Fractional reserve banking and usury and war and pornography and, you know, this trash music and just anything you can think of. And it's like, well, yeah, that's not really redeeming any of that. You know, that all seems like just different avenues of enslavement is what that seems like. And that doesn't seem very positive.
No. Well, and I'm always interested in the religion of Jesus Christ is a truth outcome. I think we talk about truthers a lot.
Yeah.
And sometimes during our spiritual and our physical journey, we find things that aren't always, what do you want to say? You know, you're like, well, I don't like that very much. But, you know, you...
Not very convenient.
It is what it is. Deal with it, you know. I mean, so when you see those kind of things, and an aspect of some of the people that you think are great people or something, and then later you find out, oh, well, not so great, you know, or whatever. But that doesn't stop us as you know, children of the kingdom from accepting the truth and moving forward with it. It's like, well, you know, by the grace of God, it's going to continue on. And I know there's a reason for this, and all things work together. So, yeah, I think there's, it's just uncovering. It's a layered thing. And they cover it up layer by layer and distort it. And when you're digging the truth out, sometimes there's things that you don't understand that don't quite fit in. But after a while, they become more apparent. Sometimes it takes years. I think it's an interesting concept.
Jason, you and I were talking briefly yesterday, and as Tim was talking, you know, my mind was wandering of the truth that Tim was saying. And, you know, there's so much truth coming out about the state of Israel right now. I wonder, Tim, if that's the, you know, that narrative of, you know, there's a difference between Zionism and Judaism, that they're already doing damage control of, you know, there's radical Zionists, and then there's, you know, Torah-abiding Jews. You know, those are two completely different animals. And that may be why, is just because so much truth is coming out about the Jews. And, you know, they're trying to, everything that they have subverted as far as the truth over time, they don't want that spilling out. So they're doing everything they can to control that and to mitigate that. And one of the greatest ones that Jason had, you know, had talked about it yesterday, and I'm just going to mention it, is, you know, they don't want the truth coming out as far as who Jesus really was. And, you know, he wasn't a Jew, you know, that they want to own that still, because that's how they control Christendom. And I it's just interesting. I don't know. It's interesting to kind of see what the play is going to be. I don't know if that's making sense, but yeah, I think that's all real interesting.
Well, I think it makes sense. I mean, you know, you've got, they want to own the fact that supposedly he was a Jew, but they don't want to own the fact that he was Messiah, that he was our Messiah, that he came to renew those people. They want to spit and curse and hit people in the head whenever they talk about Jesus, or, you know, strike them. But it's kind of a, you know, it's almost an oxymoron there as far as how that goes on. And maybe that's not the right word, but, you know, it's like they want it, but they don't want it. They just want it so they can abuse it.
Well, it's their way of, they can continue to mock Jesus Christ, and then they can continue to, you know, I mean, and that's what they're doing when they mock in Christianity. They hated Christ then, and they hate him now, and people are just hoodwinked to believe in that they, that the Jews are, you know, God's chosen people. And, there's a lot of people that, you know, have a hatred for, you know, a dislike and a hatred for Jews, but, you know, they've been programmed to be, to, you know, think, well, you know, no, they, you know, Christ was a Jew, and that, you know, if we've got to bless Israel. If we want to be blessed, that we have to bless Israel. And right. You know, it's just been built on a bunch of lies.
Yeah. That's the brainwashing. That's what makes Sire Schofield and all of that so just evil, of what happened inside the church, the American church and the church abroad, is, like you said, Jason, there are still those people that are probably skeptical about the Jews, but they have been so programmed to believe, you know, our Savior was a Jew, so not all Jews are bad. You know, obviously there has to be some redeeming qualities in them, because our Savior was a Jew, and that's just part of that truth they don't want out, because that blows the lid off of it. And when you blow the lid off of it, what else is going to spill out? And it's just more control. They're just trying to control that, and I it, The enemy is scared to death. I really believe that. And honestly, I think that's with everything that happened with Charlie Kirk and that narrative that was really mainstream, you know, it's lost some steam. It's lost some steam as far as the truth being told about Israel, everything that was going on in Palestine and Gaza and that sort of thing. And the way you take momentum away from that, you cut the legs away from that is, well, you just start having war a bunch of places. And it's pretty convenient that in the last 3-4 months, you know, it wasn't just Russia and Ukraine. It's China and Taiwan. It's the United States and all of Latin America. You know, it just start filling in the blanks of, you know, we have a European world war that is, you know, probably going to happen. And you start filling people's minds with that. And, you know, all of those brain chemicals start rolling through as far as anxiety and dread and that sort of thing. And, well, you just forget what Israel is doing. And at the end of the day, it's just the shell and the pea. They're just sorcerers and magicians. This is what they've done forever, is they get you to look somewhere else so you don't pay attention to what they're doing. And I got news, you know, maybe it's not breaking news, but they didn't stop doing what they're doing. They're still doing it, and they're going to keep doing it. They're just dividing our attention in Minnesota and Portland and, you know, wherever, so that we don't pay attention to them. And it's always been that playbook. You guys stop and think about it. You know, when something hot comes down with a Jewish scandal or the state of Israel bribing our elected officials or whatever, you know, there's always some scandal that happens in D.C. where we forget about the connection to Israel. You know, they point us towards, you know, some U.S. representative, you know, molesting little boys or something, just something so scandalous that we just forget about that whole Israel story. And that is part of the truth that needs to get out, is that type of manipulation, that we don't lose sight of who the real enemy is. I don't know that. I don't know how I got off on that. But.
Good point. I mean, very good point.
Yeah.
Very realistic. So if you control the media and the money, you can steer narrative in a major way. So,
you know, I was talking, and it bears repeating. We've talked about it on this program, but it bears repeating that Esau, Edom, these Jews, the one thing they have had over Israel, Jacob, Israel, that they have done better than us, in my opinion, is they have played the long game from the beginning. They have not waged battle against Jacob Israel in the here and the now. They have done it incrementally over thousands of years, really, but hundreds of years, thousands of years, where, like a disease, they have a slow moving disease. They have infected our culture and our society and our people to kill us from within. And because Jacob Israel would have rebelled if it had been, you know, a fast moving attack against us physically, we would have stood up and rebelled. But the enemy, being as cunning as they are, as scripture talks about, they played at our weakness, and they have created a society that is very comfortable very soft and easy, knowing that throughout history, when times were good, Israel would become soft. And that is one of the chinks in our armor that they've really played against. And I think in this conversation that we're having on coffee, that sort of thing, that we need to not go back into Trump's in office, things are looking good, you know, the immigrant, all of the things that are positives and wins. We don't need to go back to thinking everything is going to be okay. we still need to be on point, and we still need to be ready for battle. I don't know if that's making sense. You guys help me out. I'm rambling a little bit.
I think hypercritical, and jealous for the kingdom. I mean, I think that's the sheepdog's job, you know. It's like, what's going on under the surface of the pond? Because it's probably, just because it's calm on top doesn't mean it's calm underneath. And I think that's a good point. I think we need to be hypercritical of every move that our officials make, and that's going on. Is this legit? Is this, what's the benefit? What's the downside? And we're just human. I mean, I'm sure we're going to draw some conclusions that occasionally weren't correct, but that's okay. If you're in prayer and if you're in your Bible, you're still trying to lens things correctly. I laugh because, the What Would Jesus Do movement was not, the statement wasn't wrong, but the premise was that, Jesus was this all-forgiving, all-loving God. And we know that from reading our Bible that wasn't necessarily the case at all. He loved his people, he cared for his people, he came to save his people, but he also was willing to defend his people. He cast the money changers out of the temple. He told the, the Sanhedrin to take a flying cliff, and he did it in a way that was, I would call it hidden. I think a lot of times, I think that's what people don't get. The Bible means, there's several different meanings to things in the Bible, whether it's numerically, whether it's logistically or anything else, and I think that many of Christ's actions did the same thing. There wasn't just the one direct thing on there. There were other things there too. That's why it's a living word. That's why it's a living way. And when you start to understand that, then you can move forward in a meaningful fashion. And that's my thing.
Well, and Derek chimed in, and he sent in a couple messages, and I just want to read them because I think that they're good, valid points. First one, he said, John 15:18, if the world hates you, Jacob Israel, ye know that it hated me before it hated you. Very fitting verse to what these Edomites are doing today. His second one was, on Will's point, they are being revealed. 2 Thessalonians 2:3, let no man deceive you by any means, for the day shall not come except that there be a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. And, I mean, that's, I believe that's what's happening too, right there. I think it's dual prophecies being fulfilled right before our eyes.
Spot on.
Very good point.
I was gonna make a joke, Jason, and say just about the What Would Jesus Do movement. I probably wore one of those little wristbands back in the 90s. I'm sure I did at some point. And there's no doubt I believed, Jesus was love and all caring and all that. And as I have progressed in my faith and my walk with the Lord, I realize now, what Jesus actually would have done is walk into one of these mega churches and snatch these pastors up by their hairsprayed head and drag them out and say, you've defiled my Father's temple. But, that's, I guess, part of growing up, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't there
It's kind of interesting the way that when you grow in the Lord, and people ask you, well, what would Jesus do? Well, do you really want to know what would Jesus do? And they really don't want to know. It's kind of funny.
It's, yep.
Well, it's not what you think.
Yeah, there you go, Tim. The real question is, are we talking about, you know, when these people, what would Jesus do? Are you talking about your Jesus or the actual Jesus? Which one?
Exactly.
There's two things. Yeah.
Well, he talks about us knowing him, you know what I mean? So that's another thing. Like, which one is it? The one that I know or the one that you think you know?
That's right.
Yeah, no doubt.
I remember Pastor Peter's talking with somebody, and somebody said something along those lines, what would Jesus do? And he said, well, he's like, I'm glad you asked, because I'm going to tell you exactly what Jesus would do, and I'm going to show you where it's at in the scriptures. And boy, they picked the wrong person to say that to, because it was a challenge, and it was game on. Let's go. It was pretty funny.
As you were saying that, I thought that would have been the time to have a bowl of popcorn and a comfortable chair.
Yes.
let's go to school. Pastor Pete's about to take us to school. So.
Oh, man.
All the stuttering and backing up that's going to go on there is going to be worth a lot. I've seen some of those moments with him too, and it was like a lot of times it was, I don't want to talk to you anymore. And he's like, okay. So, but live and learn. So, I see. I got one here that says, "Trump says he doesn't need international law." Just a little subject change, but I was somewhat concerned by the fact that he's bound only by his own morality. That was the quote.
That's one of those things when you read the headlines, you're like, yeah. And then you read the story and you're like, I don't know. I agree we shouldn't be bound by international law, but one man's morality is not, that shouldn't be the bedrock of decision making. Yeah, absolutely. And I don't care who the man is. That's not a dig on Trump. I don't care who the man is. But interestingly enough, along this, you look into it, and pretty much this is talking about Venezuela and Greenland and the things that are going on there with, you know, threatening Denmark. And I hope what Trump means is he's going to do what's right by America, and that's his morality, but that's certainly not how it sounds or how it reads. But I mean, I think we have to agree, right? It's good that, when was the last time you heard a president say, I don't care about international law?
That is significant and noteworthy. So,
right.
And I think we need to worry about our country and our people. And I appreciate the fact that he signed a memorandum suspending support for a total of 66, interesting number, international organizations, agencies, and commissions, including several UN bodies, that operate contrary to U.S. national interest, security, economic prosperity, or sovereignty. Yay. Clear back into the 70s, I can remember the Get Us Out movement at the UN. That was like, they do not have American interests in mind. They do not have, and, you know, all of the debris that unit has on everything from Centers for Disease Control, all the other things that spew that comes out of them. And they're another one world government organization. And Pastor Peters used to say, rightly so, that whenever you see these guys beat the drum for a one world government, that's antichrist. You know, that's not.
Right.
And it's true. I mean, they never have it. in mind.
If you look at the history of the United Nations, and I know a lot of our people, the remnant are out there, they're going to know this better than me, but my understanding, if you really look at the history of the League of Nations leading up to the United Nations and that whole progression or whatever, the transformation of forming the United Nations really was centered around the creation of the State of Israel. And it really is a body that is, in my opinion, set up, to do exactly what you're saying, Tim. I mean, it's just doing the work of the enemy against the United States. The United Nations has never done anything positive for the United States. Nothing. It bleeds us dry with tax dollars that goes to fund the United Nations. And what the work of the United Nations in time, throughout time, throughout its existence, has really just been to weaken the United States. That's the way I see it. And interestingly enough, you know, what you were just talking about is get us out of the United Nations, in the United Nations, whatever. Coming out of the John Birch Society, right, Tim? That was the big push with the Birchers. So the John Birch Society, their magazine that they put out every month is called The New American. And this week, just a couple of days ago, as a matter of fact, I think it was yesterday, the senior editor of the New American magazine from the John Birch Society, a guy named William Jasper, came out publicly and said, this is as close as we've ever been to pulling out of the United Nations, and he believes Donald Trump is going to do that. Yeah. So, means nothing. It's one guy's opinion, but what he is saying is the moves, like what we were just talking about, of Trump saying international law means nothing to me, that he believes that we're close. That Trump very well may pull out of the United Nations.
Well, and so you talked about the League of Nations, and we were just talking about media and money here a little bit ago, but, the League of Nations was a major player in the IMF and the World Bank formation and everything else. So these things have all created unparalleled, global chaos. I mean, when you look at all this kind of stuff, it's like they're all. So, yeah, some good things possibly there. We'll take the wins we can get, right?
Yeah, interesting. Well, moving on, and I don't know, we didn't have this one in our notes, but I don't know if anybody else saw this or not, but it was just where Zelensky asked the U.S. to kidnap the leader over there, Ramazan, and basically it just came out and said, hey, would you guys go ahead and kidnap this guy for us? It's going to help our war. It's going to send a really strong signal to Putin, and it'd be good for us. And after reading that article, I just laughed. I mean, it was just, it's like, if you want this guy kidnapped so bad, why don't you go do it yourself?
Wow, I hadn't seen that one.
Not me either.
Oh, well.
And what was he? What country was he the leader of?
Chechen's Republic.
Okay.
Yeah, but and it was this Ramazan Kadyrov, and But yeah, I don't know. I thought it was kind of interesting, and. Basically, it was all over the Russian news networks earlier this morning, and they're like, and it was kind of funny. They were mocking him, and they're like, "Yeah, okay, Zelensky, if you want this done so bad, why don't you just do it yourself?" I mean, it was funny, but
big brother, little brother of getting the big brother to beat the guy up, huh?
Yeah,
because you can't do it yourself.
Exactly.
Don't you wonder? I do, anyways. I wonder a lot of times what's really going on over there versus what we, what we get through the filters and through all the other stuff. I mean, it's like wow. hey, this guy over here in some country that's not related to Ukraine and Russia, he's bad. Can you kidnap him for us? Because he's causing us issues. I mean, huh? So how is that an issue for you guys? I mean, I thought, yeah. So obviously, there's just the whole thing makes me scratch my head anyway. It's just like, okay, what am I not hearing? So, yeah, just come and kidnap him for it.
Yeah, I know. Well, switching gears and going back over, man, up in Minnesota, things have just gotten, crazy. And, I mean, just a mess between the riots and the and I guess we should probably just start off with the shooting that happened up there. And it's like, I like the way that you put it, Will. It's like they want a George Floyd 2.0, and that's exactly what I see that they're trying to, turn it into. What are your guys' thoughts?
Go for it, Tim.
Well, man, I've got conflicting things going on there with me. I mean, as far as that goes, and I'm not saying I'm neutralized or anything. I'm just saying she was going back to her wife. So,
strike one.
Yeah. So,
and that's one of those things right there. I mean, you're talking about she's a dyke lesbian, and they keep putting it out on the news. Oh, a mother of three, a mother of three. They're really trying to cover that up. it's a mother of three, or from what I understand, it's both. She had the three children, but then, now she's married to her wife and it's a completely different story, but, they really try to use one to pull on the heartstrings of people talking about a mother of three and, they leave out the rest of it.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about the narrative. She's white. She's over there at this arrest site. She's raising things. I think that what we're seeing here, maybe to a certain degree, and this is just off the cuff, but I think maybe what we're seeing here is a certain amount of pot stirring going on in regards to, ISIS reaction to some of these things as far as diverting our thought processes from the reality that we need to be thinking about something. And so, everybody, I feel so bad for her. And everybody has this poor lady thing going on. And it's like, I don't know. I have a hard time feeling much loss for someone like that. I'm all about getting these illegals out of the country. I think that's great. I think we need to see a more intense, activity in that area. So there's a lot of things there that we need to question. I guess I got any of you guys. I mean, I'm in here with you guys.
Well, I mean, you look at that. Basically, it's like, I mean, just talk about, there's a war and there's terrorists and, these people and these protesters that were protesting ICE up there, they have been having gotten the training to and told, to drive away from the ICE agents. And you watch the video. I know that there's a lot of controversy over just, the videos, and I've watched it. They try to put out one angle. And one side puts out one angle and the other side puts out, the other angle. And you watch something that, CNN puts out, or you watch something that Fox puts out, and they're just completely different. I watched all of them. I went through as many videos as I possibly could find on that. And, it was very clear that that ICE agent was acting in, self-defense. he was struck with a deadly weapon. And he did what anybody that has had any defense training with a firearm would do. And that is, you know, it's your life is at risk. You take action so that you do not lose your life. And you know, it was very clear to me that was what happened. And you know, if it would have been a completely different narrative. If it would have been a black guy and a cop was driving that vehicle, they would have portrayed it completely different. I know that they want a riot, they want a war, and even a week ago I was wondering what's going to happen next in Minneapolis, because they had to take the focus off of all of these illegal daycares. And you know, Tim Walz was under a lot of heat and getting investigated with fraud and you name it, and now he's coming back and he's trying to be a hero and saying, oh, you know get out of Minnesota, federal agents aren't allowed here. It's just just so many things that are taking place. Will, what's your thoughts?
Well, I want to talk about the use of force first.
Okay.
And then we can talk about these agitators and the protesters. But I just, from a pure standpoint of the use of force, as I see it, and I'm like you, Jason, I've looked at all the different angles and of video footage and that sort of thing. And what I'm about to say is not, this is universal as American citizens, just universal of our right to protect ourselves. And there's been a lot of litigation over the years that have made it to the Supreme Court trying to really hammer out what self-defense looks like, of appropriate use of force and that sort of thing. And in this instance, every American citizen would be afforded the ability to protect their life in a similar situation. Take away the vehicle. Just take away the vehicle. You've got a neighbor's pit bull that charges you, and you're armed. And you're not going to stand and get mauled by a pit bull waiting for the cops or animal control or whatever to come. That's not going to happen. And no one reasonably would believe that you should do that. That you can pick up a 2x4 or choke the dog to death or stab it with your pocket knife or whatever you need to do in order to protect your life from serious bodily injury or death. So nothing changes when we start looking at the weaponization of a vehicle towards a human life. And to put this in perspective, because I really want to kind of just divorce our listeners' mindset from this being an ICE agent and this Butch Dyke lesbian, and look at what we were talking about during the Christmas holidays of the weaponization of vehicles in these Christmas markets in Germany and in Europe. Where we've had this happen in Wisconsin, where there was a crazy man who drove a vehicle through a parade. It's certainly happened in Europe by these jihadis using these vehicles as weapons of mass destruction. The difference being those people that were affected in these pedestrian areas at the parade in Wisconsin and different places, they weren't armed. And I wish they hadn't been. And in those situations, if the murderer, if the person committing this assault and behind the wheel of that vehicle had been met with deadly force from an individual, stopping this threat from the further loss of life or bodily injury, they're completely justified. And the reason why they're completely justified is because they are lawfully in an area and this person is aggressing towards them, they
have every right in that moment to defend themselves. Well, so did the ICE agent. And the real story behind this is these two lesbians were there as whatever they're calling themselves, as trained observers or whatever, as agitators, preventing the lawful discharge of the duties of these ICE agents. And I told Jason this, and I'm going to tell everyone listening to us, I have a hard time internally rooting for the feds. I'm not a big lover of federal law enforcement. But I'm
nor am I. I just want to put that out there too.
Yeah. So I don't want to think people. Yeah, go ahead, Tim.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
Okay. No. I don't want people thinking I'm cheerleading the feds, because I'm not. If, and I told Jason this, if I believe what that ICE agent had done was wrong, I'd be on the rooftop shouting it. If I really would. I this isn't a I love the feds thing. But in this instance, what the guy did was get out and tell the woman to get out of the street. Because what isn't really being fully explained to everyone is they had parked this Honda Pilot perpendicular across this Minneapolis street to prevent the ICE agents from traveling down the road. They were preventing them from discharging their lawful duties. They were blocking a roadway, which isn't just a violation of this federal law of letting these guys not do their duties. It is a state charge in Minnesota. I looked it up. You can't block a roadway like that. So they were already breaking Minnesota law, as well as preventing these ICE guys from doing their duties. So he didn't get out with his gun pointed. He didn't get out and execute this woman. He got out and told her to move. And what happened was the one lesbian that looks like a dude, you know, starts berating him and filming him and whatever. And he goes around and takes down the license plate number, because now he's going into being a cop, right? He's going to say, I'm out with this vehicle or whatever he's going to do. And the one lesbian who's the boy looking one, did you guys hear what she was saying? She was
telling her to drive away, I think. That's what I.
Well, no. What she was telling the ICE agent.
Oh, yeah.
She was telling the ICE agent, we're not scared. If you're coming for us, come on.
We're not changing our license plates. Yeah.
Right. We're not changing. And then tells him, if you're coming for us, you better bring a lunch. You know, this kind of stuff. And it's like, okay, the guy is just wanting you to move your car. And so when he goes around to the front of the car, that's when she tells whoever, drive, baby, drive. And so now you stop and put yourself back into that position of the neighbor's pit bull attacking you, or I'm minding my own business on the sidewalk and someone's driving a truck at me. Whatever the case may be, at the moment that vehicle started moving, and he did get hit, that is no longer in question. The enemy media wanted you to believe that he did not get hit. He got hit with the vehicle. And at that moment, what is the ICE agent supposed to do? Die? Is he supposed to allow himself to get killed? Is he supposed to allow for his legs to be mangled and broke? Or does he meet force with force? This is a simple paradigm of any use of force encounter. But more importantly, this is a simple paradigm for human existence. From the beginning of time, we have protected ourselves against attack. And it doesn't matter if it's a bear in a cave, a dog in your neighborhood street, or a crazy liberal lesbian trying to run over a federal agent. All of us are guaranteed the God-given right to protect ourselves. And that is what I don't want to get lost in this.
And what I'm telling people is, if you're at an, if you drive up to an ATM and you're going to get $40 out of the bank because you're going to go do whatever, and someone comes to attack you, you can attack them back. I advocate it. I mean, that's what we should do. So to me, the story is obviously being politicized, that it's, you know, these evil Trump stormtroopers versus the law-abiding lesbians in Minneapolis and all of that. For me, what I don't want to get lost here is the proper use of force. And it's not law enforcement. It's all of us. And I don't want that to get, you know, armchair quarterback to where people believe what that guy did was wrong, because it's not. What he did was right, and I wouldn't want any of our people to do that if they were fit, if they were met. And I'm going to tell you, Jason and Tim, with these riots that have happened, with these street demonstrations, with these flash mobs, with all of this, these tools of the anarchist and the communist that have spread all across our country over the last 5-6 years that we have seen, the probability, where it may be low, it is still probable that we may find ourselves at the wrong intersection at the wrong time. Not of any fault of ours, but just because that's the whole idea of a flash mob. It comes out of nowhere. And I ask people, are you going to allow your vehicle to be overturned or firebombed? Are you going to drive over some hippies? And yeah. And what I would say is, drive over the anarchist. I don't wish that on anybody, because we have to deal with the aftermath and live with that action. But what are we supposed to do? Let them kill us?
Yeah.
And the answer is no. I don't know. Well, maybe that was too much, Jason. But that's what I want to say is, put yourself in the same position as that ICE agent, and not to mention that, and what we know now is, over the summer, this guy was arresting an illegal and was dragged 300 feet and got his leg broke in a very similar situation. So now you put in that guy's mindset at the time, this is about to happen again. How do we expect him to act?
Yeah.
I think he acted appropriately.
I think he did too.
I'm sorry, Tim, I cut you off.
No, just agreeing with you wholeheartedly. And I think there's an optic issue here for the left on this, as far as the news goes, because they've played this one up. But on what was it, the 8th of January, we had not really an exactly the same incident, but a similar incident
right. Took
place in Portland.
Hold that thought there, Tim. We're going to go to the phone lines. We got somebody that's been waiting there for a little bit. Hello, caller.
I'm just Tom from New Jersey. Has it occurred to you that maybe this is just a psyop? It was all a setup deal?
Yeah, it did. But I don't really think it is.
Well, I think it is, because I had this right in front of me here from X, whatever that's worth. But so it turns out the ICE officer involved supplied the prior vehicular assault requiring 33. Not 32, not 34, exactly 33 stitches. Did you hear that? 33 stitches. Okay. It happened at 3333 Portland Avenue on 33rd and Portland, the 3330 block, where every address starts with 33. So we may just be watching a movie, after all, is what the comment says. I remember Kurt, he's a survivalist. I called him one time about the Parkland thing, and he said that these events are staged. And they call the media in advance to set that up so they can take pictures and stuff. And this is all these events, all staged, as far as I'm concerned. But to me, this is a staged event, and I think everybody's looking in the wrong direction here. I look at the Freemasons, whatever that is. They are in charge of a lot of stuff, the media, the banking, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't believe any of this. I watch these videos over and over again, and I didn't see anything that looked unstaged, okay? It didn't seem spontaneous to me. So what do you think about that? Hello?
Yeah. I don't know what to say. I've talked to people that were in the area. I mean, I don't think it was staged. I think it was a real event.
Did you see the body of the woman taken out?
No.
Did you see any doctors? Why not? I think it was totally staged. There's no body. There's no blood. There's no nothing like that. It looked fake as could be to me. I think we should be looking in that direction rather than trying to ponder over all these minutiae.
Well,
I think that's a perspective, and I think there are certain instances. There have certainly been incidences in the United States that have occurred that do appear to stage. You know, I didn't see any media there. You were talking about the media being scene.
All the media is not media anymore. It's all these cell phone things. So where is the media on this? The lady wasn't taken to the hospital? She wasn't, that was the end of it. She crashed her car and that was the end of her. That doesn't sound logical to me. Where did she go? If she's dead, where's her body? Where's the blood?
But do we know that she wasn't taken to the hospital?
Do you know that she was? With all the coverage that we've had?
No.
I mean, repeatedly they showed over and over and over and over again this car being stopped and talked to, and then she drove off and she got shot. I don't know. Like this Charlie Kirk thing. I can't believe the Charlie Kirk thing.
I'm sorry, I spoke over. What were you saying about Charlie Kirk?
Wouldn't it be... I don't believe that for a split second. That seemed to be a psy-up to me. The location in Idaho, where there's a CIA agency right nearby.
It was Utah,
whatever. That was going to be confused. I just don't believe almost anything I look at is probably a psy-op. It's my first take. And I'm never disappointed. So I don't know. You can think what you want to think, but I think that it was a psy-op. There's too many 33s. That's usually a giveaway. When you see a number 33, it's like their code. And they're telegraphing it to you. So, you know, I just don't believe it. Well, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I made my point, and I'm happy with that. So you can ponder that. You can decide for yourself whether you think it's a psyop or not. But Tom Flannery says it is a psyop. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for calling.
Thank you, Tom.
And we got, I think, let's see if we still got Warren on the line. Hello, Warren.
Yeah, it's calling in. I wasn't able to listen in today, but I called in at a perfect timing, it sounds like. You know, we all saw all that footage over and over again with that woman being shot. And I heard what Donald Trump and his sidekick says. It sounds to me like, I don't want to really compare it to Elijah, but a little bit of Ahab and Elijah there were. She was labeled as a troublemaker in America. And I think we should play that song, Hey, Hey, What's Happening There? You know, that song back in the, during the Vietnam War.
Right.
So that was recorded in 1967, you know, during the heat of the Vietnam War. And we had to draw a line somewhere because in that song it says we have to draw the battle line. And We've got to put a halt to these thugs coming in and, you know, shooting American citizens. So we get a chance to play that song today.
I'll try, Warren.
I mean, that is an American song. Sheila likes that one. One tin soldier right away. That one you like.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And I also like the one, the boxer and the fighter. They're all playing to today's times, so God bless you.
Yeah, thanks for calling. And the phone number is 970-224-4203. That's
970-224-4203. Well, and I would go so far as to say that Tom's calling. I mean, I appreciate his calling, and I appreciate, you know, the thoughts on that, and if it wasn't a psyop, it's very possible that it's going to get twisted into one. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, so I things that equal each other are sometimes the same. I mean, very possible that who knows what was added in where, but it doesn't. It also doesn't change some of the, you know, stuff that we're looking at as far as was this right, was this wrong, and those sort of things. And I don't disagree that a lot of these things that are going on right now, whether it's this shooting in Portland, which is basically a nothing burger, they haven't mentioned it as far as that goes. Those guys were, what were they? They were gang-related, Venezuela gang-related sex offenders. And they don't want to talk about Trinity and Aragua guys because that's a bad apple. But we can do this and get mileage out of it against. And I think we're seeing this bent into a PSYOP or used as a PSYOP to create, you know, foment defensive posturing and frustration with ICE and with the illegal aliens. The narrative's definitely been steered at. So I think that's kind of, I do think there's PSYOP-like situations going on there. And I think that's what we're trying to debunk a little bit.
To your point, Tim, what I think, and it was going to, that was going to be kind of my follow-up to what I was talking about in the use of force, is I don't think there's any coincidence. We talk about coincidences and how there are none on this show a lot. That this training that Jason, I think we're going to call. Go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, we'll go to the phone lines. Hello, caller.
Hi, gentlemen. This is Kevin in Ohio.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Kevin.
Good morning. Hi, AR. Man, there's just too much to talk about.
Number one. You think?
The governor of New Colorado is trying to let Tina Peters out, right? You seen that?
Yeah. He's a piece of work, but he's been mouthing about it. He's trying to get a bunch of people to back him too, and this is his last year as being a governor, and he wants to come out and he wants to do some good things. And you know, they had some what do you know about it, Kevin?
Just what you said. That's what I've read.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. I don't know. Keep our fingers crossed, and I'm hoping and praying she gets out. But it'd be like it if they got things. It's a mess.
Yeah. I don't want us involved going to have a shootout for Iran. I mean, it's just what if they came here because we had riots? I don't buy that at all. We have no business doing that sort of thing. What do you think?
I agree. I do. I
agree.
I think you're right.
Yeah, Trump says in there and fix it. I don't think that's going to happen. And I think the really, really big one is this week is that hypersonic Arishnik missile that was fired into Lviv, Ukraine.
That was some kind of retaliation, wasn't it?
Yeah, for that presidential resident in December, and
the kidnapping of
the mayor of Kiev saying get out of Kiev, we have no gas, no electric, no water, and we're not going to be able to supply it to you. They hit their biggest underground storage facility for natural gas and just wiped it out. I mean, these people are going to be freezing, starving, and everything else. I mean, I wish they
Kevin,
would
take to that end. Yeah. Kevin, this is Will. I just get your opinion because I know you know that region pretty well. Vladimir Klitschko, the mayor of Kiev, making that announcement. The first thing I thought is, I wonder what kind of intelligence they have that you're going to see the Russian troops push on into Kiev because they're not far away. And with kind of peppering the the city there of kind of plowing the field, it sure seems like that's kind of the precursor to maybe a physical occupation of Kiev. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far. I would love to see it, tell you the truth. I just would.
Yeah.
Give that rat nowhere to go. That's Zelensky. Just give him nothing.
Yeah.
No hiding places. Did you see where the Vice President of France, National Assembly, asking for a resolution to withdraw from NATO?
I didn't see that.
I did not.
Yeah.
This from Hal Turner. I couldn't find a better resource. I mean, with all his 15 years with the FBI, Joint Terrorism Task Force and all that, he's solid. And he's reporting that the security guard, Protector Maduro, was given an account that the U.S. used a sonic weapon to neutralize everything that happened there in Venezuela. Did you read anything about that?
I did.
It caused bleeding from her nose, her mouth, and she was totally incapacitated. And that, you know, we have weapons we know nothing about, don't we? Wow.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And I don't want to talk too much, but the main thing, one thing, you're talking about songs, and I think the one that really that almost makes me cry was done by Peter, Paul, and Mary, and they sing, "Where did all the soldiers go? Where have all the soldiers gone? Long time passing." Do you remember that? Have you heard that?
Yes.
Yeah. That's just, back to flowers, everyone. and also, one more thing. Turner's also reporting there are tanks and heavy armor assembling in Mexico because they're bringing weaponry and aircraft back to the United States from Europe for a possible strike on Mexico, and I don't know about that.
For a couple of weeks now, Kevin, the Navy has been flying basically the entire country of Mexico, and what they're flying is it's not the AWACS anymore because we're far past that, but it's the modern day version of the AWACS, and they're gathering signal intelligence from cell phones and that sort of thing. They've been doing that now for a couple of weeks, and you know, for me, my thought on that is, you know, if you're intelligence gathering and using cell phone data and wireless data, it sure seems like they're probably pinpointing targets.
Yes, they are. Yeah, sounds to me like that too. And then I saw one more this week too. There were letters sent to the Postal Service people. And it's similar to what was done in COVID, giving them instructions on what to do in that kind of situation. Have you seen anything about that?
Yeah, necessary personnel or essential personnel letters that are to be carried with them. No real comment about the event, but I did see those as an out.
Well, thank you very much, John.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Kevin. Appreciate it. God bless. You have a good weekend.
God bless you.
Well, and we had a couple calls that came in that phone lines were full. So if you called in and couldn't get us, go ahead and call back.
there's a whole bunch of things going on all over the place. But, you know, what are you, in light of a lot of things and trying to perspectivize it, I guess is the right word. It's like, wow, we've got turmoil. I think that one of the things I think that's interesting to me is, and I've mentioned this before, I think that Russia has exercised some pretty big restraint in regards to the Ukraine, But if NATO is going to ramp up the pressure, and this may be the, you know, you're back to reactive reasoning, but if NATO continues to ramp up the pressure on Russia, that's going to expedite, you know, retaliation or retribution in Ukraine, because in the event you're something like that, you're going to want cushion in there, so that there's going to be some serious wipeout in that regard to push that front back. I think from a military tactic standpoint, it's like, yeah, we need to move that back. We need our port now. We need, you know, so I think that makes some degree of sense there as far as that goes. I think that we're seeing some of that kind of stuff go on. I think it's going to expedite response.
Along those lines, you know, Putin has said several times during this conflict that he didn't want Kiev. You know, they only wanted those Russian regions to the south and east. And if there is a move into Kiev, I you know, obviously they're changing the script there for a reason, whatever that may be. And I think it is, Tim, I think you're spot on. I think it's directly related to NATO's posturing in these European countries of, you know, them getting on a war footing. I think that's what Putin's doing, that he very well may just try to take the remainder of Ukraine as a counter to that.
Yeah, that's my assessment, for what it's worth. I mean, but you know, it's just like, yeah, we need some space. So okay, fine. Yeah, and I mean, we see all this saber rattling about Zelensky and about peace, you know, and about talk, and then all this other stuff. I don't know. Does anybody else ever get the feeling? It's like, yeah, there's a lot of rattling, there's a lot of talking, but nothing really gets done. You know, nothing changes. When does this take place? How long does this take? Why are there no arrests? Why is there, you know, I mean, I feel that way over the steel up there in Minnesota. Where's the arrest of that? We've got all these people that are, you know, they're taking millions, billions of dollars in fraudulent funds. And why don't we have some people being, you know, drug off and cuffed? I mean, if you have some doctor or something who abuses the Medicare system, why they're drug out of there this week, you know. So it doesn't take very long to make that happen. And this is no different, except it's much more international. So, yeah, makes you wonder.
Yeah, I know. Well, and you know, just we're seeing these things where, you know, people are rioting like crazy. And it seems like anymore, you don't know when a riot is going to erupt. What's happening with the riots? Have you guys heard any updates on that as far as, or are they still just trying to, you know, fan the fire?
As far as in
I think they're trying to fan the fire. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. The other thing is that the left has become increasingly violent. I mean, you know, when we had these other people in power, Biden and the other, whatever you want to call them, liberals, quote unquote, you know, it was all peace. And, you know, you don't need guns, and you don't need this, and you don't need that, and we've got you. And suddenly now the script's been flipped. We've got these people out there, they're using firearms to commit violent acts, or cars, or, you know, whatever else is convenient. And I think it's like, well, it's okay for us to do that, but you guys should. And that's the way I feel about it.
Agreed. I think
you know, I'm going to go back to the whole PSYOP thing again. And I don't think it's a coincidence that we've seen that we saw within about 24 hours an incident happen in Minneapolis and an incident happen in Portland. And there are, Jason alluded to it earlier in the show, that these agitators, including these illegals, so it's not just the, you know, the white anarchist agitators, it's also these illegals that are being coached by organizations that, you know, to drive away from these ICE agents and that sort of thing. Well, you know, that's a recipe for disaster, whether it's a chase with the cops or, you know, like what happened in Minneapolis with this lesbian. The reason why that's important, that they're being coached and they're being trained to do this, is it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, if you get these folks to do this enough, and if you stop and think about it going back to the summer, we've seen many instances of this, of ICE agents getting hit by vehicles, of ICE agents' vehicles getting rammed by other vehicles and that sort of thing. This is what they're wanting, because it's that self-fulfilling prophecy of probability. If we do this enough, eventually the right person will get killed that will fan the flames of the rioting or whatever the case. So it's the PSYOP isn't that it is necessarily this incident was staged. The PSYOP is they are creating an environment that is staged. And the environment is just probability, that if you go to, and if you stop and think about 5 years ago with the George Floyd riots, like Jason said at the beginning of the show, the George Floyd 2.0, and you think about the communities in the country that rioted, Minneapolis being number one, and then Portland and Seattle and places like that, it's not really a coincidence that within 24 hours we saw the same activity happen across the country, right? From the West Coast to the middle of the country, the same thing happened. And what I would propose to you guys is the real PSYOP isn't that they're staging like a Hollywood show to control America. The real PSYOP is there are elements of America that's already controlled and brainwashed in doing the bidding of these bastards. And they will set in motion these events, like Tim talks about a lot, you know, with the problem, reaction, solution, of what they will do is to use that Hegelian dialectic to cause the problem, to achieve the reaction, and then to see what the people do. And you go to these communities where they already know, they've ran the actuaries in real time. We saw Portland burn. We saw Minneapolis burn. Yeah. They know that there's elements of those populations in those places that are prone to rioting and violence in the streets. So where do you think they're going to make it happen? They're not going to make it happen where I live. They're not going to make it happen where y'all live. They're going to make it happen where they know how the people will react. And so in these particular population centers, that's why you're seeing this violence towards the ICE officers as far as the ramming of the vehicles and that sort of thing, because they know the probability is higher for the people to riot here. And I'm going to tell you, the reason why I personally believe that, and this is why it's not staged, because if they were going to stage it, you wouldn't stage this in Minneapolis, Minnesota in January. It's cold there. You would stage it in April or May when people actually can hit the street. And so that is what, if anything is keeping Minneapolis from falling apart right now, it's weather. If it was warmer weather right now, I think you would see Minneapolis falling apart. So, but, you know, we're on into January now, and I think as time moves on, we're going to continue to see the same thing. And the one thing that we're not talking about that I want to mention briefly, Jason, I know we're getting down to the last little bit of the show, is we're talking about the lunatic fringe. We're talking about the lunatic left. We're talking about the violence of the lunatic left against these federal agents and that sort of thing. And I get it. But what happens when one of them get killed? What happens when one of the ICE agents gets killed and ran over and killed, murdered, whatever the case may be, by the lunatic left?
What does the other side do? What does it look like then from President Trump and the federal forces? And that's something we really need to think about, because I'm going to go back to that whole idea of probability. It's a matter of time as we see the violence ramp up in the opposition to this immigration effort and all that sort of stuff. What happens when we see one of those guys go down? What does it look like from the Trump administration? Then I'll go as far as saying, what does it look like from the guys on the street that are supporting that mission? You know, did they take a look at these anarchists and say, enough's enough, and they start taking it into their own hands? I'm not suggesting that. I'm not advocating that. I'm just throwing it out there for people to think about of what does it happen? And I'll go as, and, you know, I don't know, Jason, don't fuss at me if you didn't want me to say this, but I'm going to go ahead and say it. I have played it over my head a bunch this week. We have a man in the White House where I think it's completely probable that, you know, he may make a statement on social media or live in a press conference and say, you know, the good people in Minneapolis need to do something about this.
Yeah. And yeah. I've thought the same thing. I thought that it's very, very possible.
And what happens then, right?
Yeah. Well, in a way, this ties kind of, it's kind of funny to me. It's circular, at least. I don't know if anybody else does it, but it ties back into the whole, what you're basically talking about with the president saying something like that, Will, is posse comitatus, which takes us back to Gordon Call. I mean, it's basically like, hey, if you don't like this, you guys should help, you know, do something about it. And that is the essence of what that is that each of us is responsible for our, you know, our area of living, our peace, our security, our safety. That's an American hallmark. I think it's interesting that every one of these illegals, and I mean every one of them that's been brought in, is a paid actor by government monies from when Obama and Biden and all these people brought them in. They have been on the government dole since the day they got here. They were handed checks and Visa cards and cell phones and everything else. So they're all paid actors. They have a dog in the, you know, they're getting paid. So when the money gets shut off, what are they going to do? You know, we're back to demographics and actuarial, you know, numbers and everything. They're going to act up. They're going to resist. They're going to defend their way of life and themselves. And sometimes with violence and with great reaction. You know, it's not like they're, well, okay, you don't want me here anymore. Yeah, I'll get on the airplane. It's just, no, they're not going to do that. So, I think that's what we're seeing.
And so, I want to jump on to what you just said, Tim, and just really dogpile on it, because paid actors is a great way of putting it. Another way of putting it is mercenaries. They are, if you look at it from a wartime footing, if they do get weaponized, all they are mercenaries, right? That they have been paid from the moment they got here, and there will be elements within our own government, within our own society, that if you want to continue to get paid, this is what you have to do. And I think it really bears mentioning that when we talk about the clash of cultures and we look at the culture of the American nation, us as American citizens, we, for all of our political division, have lived in a very stable society for a long time now. If you look at where these people, the majority of these people have come from, they don't share that same culture. They come from communist, socialist, Marxist societies that regularly have armed revolutions to overthrow elected leaders. This is what they know. Say regularly, I mean like every 10 or 20 years, something happening like this in Latin America. And it may not be the very country of Nicaragua, but it may be Honduras right next door, where they know that this is what you do to overthrow someone who you don't want into office. So you put in perspective that, you know, if you really want to believe 3 million, you can believe 3 million. It's more like 30 million of them in the United States, whether it's Mexico or Central America or South America or whatever. That is how they know to vote. They don't vote like we vote. The way they vote is overthrowing elected officials with violence. So when you really put that in perspective, they're mercenaries. And are they, the question is, will they be utilized that way against this administration, that administration, whatever it may look like? Because I'm telling you, as we move forward with this and you start seeing J.D. Vance, the vice president, has already come out and started discussing a doctrine of going door to door with ICE, that they in these immigrant neighborhoods, these invader neighborhoods, that they are going to use ICE to go door to door. Is what they're talking about. So when you start seeing that in the infiltration of these strongholds of these illegals, what is going to be said by those people that are pushing the buttons and controlling the purse strings of these invaders? Are they going to say the only way you're going to make it is take up arms and rebel against these people? And I don't know, but I do believe that's the way we're headed. I'm just throwing that out there. That is a real probability.
Well, and speaking about them as mercenaries, I know we're running down on time, but also the mean or the core group of this of American citizen resistance that we're seeing out here, at least this is what we're seeing or what we're seeing. They're a fringe element. We already talked about the lunatic fringe, but they're liberal, anti-God, communist, socialist philosophy, LGBTQ, gender confused individuals. You know, these are the ones that are out there trying to run over people and do these sort of things. And in essence, they're all paid mercenaries too, because most of them are on welfare or on, whatever particular government, dole that they can get on. So, there's some people have to work for a living, so it's tough for them to get out and do anything. But these people, they have an alternate income resource. Anyways, just throwing that out. That kind of ties into it as far as that goes.
Interestingly enough, I don't know if you guys have had a chance to see, but Laura Ingraham, who's a host from Fox News, I just caught the clip of it. There's an interesting little blurb, little video segment that has come out and floating around since yesterday. She was on the ground, I guess, in Minneapolis, and there's these protesters out there doing what they do. And I don't know if it was Ingraham herself or someone else as a counter protester that yelled out, "Go get a job," toward the protesters. And like a little ray of sunshine from heaven, a female protester says on the Fox News cameras, "I'm getting paid right now."
Oh, yeah.
And I it's like, okay. So I mean, I don't know if that's proof, but it's on camera. It's on video of your protesters that are just wanting social justice for the lunatic lesbian. Really, they're just getting paid. That's why they're there.
It's certainly contributing evidence at the very least.
Yes.
Yeah. No doubt. So, yeah.
I mean, y'all got to stop and think. I mean, Minnesota's cold. I mean, I think I'd have to get paid to go stand in the street too. I don't think I would want to be out there, but. I don't know.
Well, there's some reason that's right. They're motivated in some fashion beyond ideology, probably, for sure.
Hate's a good motivator. Yeah,
a lot of these people didn't want to come out of their parents' basement before, so
yeah.
Why are they here now?
Well, with everything that RFK Jr.'s doing, maybe there's a shortage on Cheetos. And they had to surface to try to find more Cheetos to go back in the basement. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I guess one of the questions, okay, moving on, we only got a couple minutes left, but, you know, what is, in your guys' opinion, what is a good, how do you prepare for the riot? What is a good, you know, let's talk about a little bit of a prepper tip of the week, but how do you prepare for a riot? How do you prepare if something like this broke out in your town or a town near you, how could that affect you, and what would be some things that would be wise to basically prepare for? I mean, because I see it, it's like we see it in Portland, we see it in Minneapolis. I mean, it's very possible that it breaks out again in Denver or Boulder or, you know, Fort Collins or Austin or someplace, Lincoln, anywhere around you. How is that going to affect you, or if that was happening in your town, and what would be some good ways that you could be prepared for that situation?
That's a good question. I'll say that, assuming it's your local area, and then I'll go first, but I think that you should definitely know your area, and you should always have some alternative transportation routes. I mean, as far as if you have to get somewhere, you should know how to route yourself around that.
Amen.
That being said, you should also operate on the top half of your gas tank. You know, I mean, that way you're not low on fuel. You don't have to stop. Obviously, a lot of our inclement weather tips matter too. Have some water in your car. You might want to try listening to local news and weather reports to make sure that if those areas are identified, that you avoid those areas and stay out of it. I mean, that'd be a good start. That's just what comes to mind for me.
One of the things, tagging right along with Tim, of what he was saying is, I'm a big believer in one of the first steps of prepping for anything. I don't care what the situation is mindset. And one of the things that you've got to fight the urge to go see for yourself. Curiosity truly killed the cat. And like Tim was saying, you're hearing news reports, somebody's texting you saying, hey, something's going on at the library or whatever. You don't need to see it to make sure it's really happening. That's a bad idea. Generally speaking, that's a bad idea. Now, if you got a loved one or something that's in the area that you need to go, extract from the area or whatever, that's one thing. But just to go looky-loo and see what's going on, that's not a good idea. So that to me is my number one prep, is don't let curiosity overrule common sense. The other thing too is, in the situation that we were talking about earlier, about these flash mobs and that sort of thing, blocking intersections, blocking streets, prohibiting traffic from traveling down the road and that sort of thing, we need to get out of the mindset of breaking the law. I know that's a big one, right? Like, you know, we're all good law abiding citizens and that sort of thing, but put in perspective this: if I'm on a residential street, like a neighborhood street, and the blacktop is blocked by vehicles or whatever, I'm gonna drive in people's yards. I mean, I'm just going to. I'm going to leave the roadway, and I'm going to travel where cars aren't supposed to travel, to try to make my egress out of the area. And the way I've always thought about that is, I can always go back later and make it right with those homeowners as far as the ruts that I leave them in the yard. I'm only going to get one chance to get out of the area before I'm hurt, injured, or something like that. So get into the mindset of not just having alternate routes on streets as far as named streets. Think about alleyways. And what I'm about to say is crazy, Jason, but when was the last time that you were at a shopping center? Well, I hope I don't go to shopping centers very often at all, but when was the last time you go to a shopping center and you drive behind the building. Go drive behind the building and see, are there alternate routes behind this building that's, you know, that can get me away from a parking lot where there's a mob? And if there are, you know, make mental notes of those things, of having secondary and tertiary, you know, avenues of egress to get you back to your house. And that is kind of that. The other side of this, too, is your normal preps, the preps that we have as far as food, water, and that sort of thing. We talk about grid down situations a lot, right? That's the situation everybody wants to talk about. But what happens when, if you do have a riot that breaks out in your town and the grocery store, because, I mean, my town only has one grocery store, they just decide we're going to close up and we're going to board up the windows, and they may not open for 2 or 3 days. So that might be the time to tap into those resources, too. I don't know. That's kind of the thoughts on that. But what about you, Jason? What do you think?
I agree with you 100%. I mean, I think having your food and having that ready to go is definitely you got to think about, you know, sheltering in place. But there's also a time when shelter in place may not be ideal. And you know, be ready to get out of town, get out of Dodge.
Yep.